know about you, but during the pandemic, I've just been facing tasks day to day. Not trying to worry about what's on the horizon next month, just the daily challenges. It seems like every time I'm in the break room and somebody walks by and I ask how you're doing, they just say, just trying to get through the day. I've been hearing a lot more of that over the last 4 months than maybe any other period of our lifetimes. But if you're a coach that's out of season right now, you can't really have the approach of just worrying about the day, because you need to make sure your sport, your team, your teammates, yourself, you're all ready for the start of the season. It's a massive undertaking to get ready for a start of the year. Right now, the sports world is focused on football, it seems like. College sports, their biggest priority, making sure they have a college football season that happens. And the biggest story in sports is trying to get the NFL off the ground. Even as the NBA has their bubble, the NHL gets set to go to Canada and their two hub cities, et cetera, et cetera. But as all that's happening, Coach K, he sent a warning sign to college basketball, to the college sports world earlier this week, saying that all the attention right now is being paid exclusively to concerns of playing football, and some of that attention needs to go to college basketball. This is what he said to Mark Packer on Sirius XM Radio.
We need to have the NCAA tournament, and we need to have some contingency plans based on when the season would start. Everyone says it's going to start on time. We'll see. I would like for us to take a great look at contingency plans, you know, when it might also be. Can it be in April? Can it be in May? But we need, and the NCAA needs men's NCAA tournament. If you don't have it 2 years in a row, the NCAA financially could go in another direction.
Before we get to contingency plans, I just want to make this point. I'm more concerned about college basketball without a vaccine than college football. Now, kind of like college football a few months ago, college basketball has the advantage of time. Hopefully we're in a place there is a vaccine, and there's a lot of good news we're seeing overseas about vaccines that are working and testing well, and more people are being exposed to those vaccines. So hopefully this is a moot point by the time we get to November. But without that vaccine, I think college basketball is in more trouble than college football is right now. Just think of the sheer numbers. In FBS football, the top level of college football, there are 130 teams. In Division I college basketball, there are 350. In a college football season, average team plays about a dozen games. In Division I basketball, you're talking about over 30 games per year. That's three times as many teams at the top level and three times as many games for those teams. It's impossible to do a bubble, not just from a resources perspective, but that completely throws away any idea of amateurism. The NBA, it works because they have the resources, there are less squads, and they're professionals. College basketball, they are still, air quote, student athletes. Let's also not ignore an obvious couple of circumstances. College basketball is played indoors, exclusively indoors. Except for that one time, North Carolina faced Michigan State on a boat. But aside from that, it's an indoor sport. And it takes place during flu season. Those aren't good signs. It's easier to spread indoors, the virus, we've learned, and the world is anticipating a second wave of coronavirus in the winter. Meanwhile, college football, you're talking about, in the Big Ten's case, getting in 8 to 10 games. The ACC wants to have its full schedule right now, but we'll see if that changes in the next week. The Board of Governors is voting Friday for the NCAA to see if they're going to fully support having a season, having a sanctioned season. So college football, I mean, most of the teams are outside. You can have the testing. You can have the protocol. to try and get through the season somehow, some way. That's why I believe there's going to be a football season this fall. It might be delayed. It might not be 12 games, but it's going to happen. College basketball, without a vaccine, indoor sport, during flu season, 350 D1 teams, over 30 games played. It's a massive undertaking. So I'm glad Coach K is taking the reins yet again as an ambassador for college basketball to raise a red flag, to shoot a flare gun in the sky, and let people know we're here too and we have some issues. There are issues we need to address right now. It's all good and well. I see pictures of Roy Williams and Garrison Brooks on the floor right now at Carolina practicing. But teams traveling all across the country, 350 of them? Multiple games a week? That's tough. That's tough to figure out without a vaccine. The NCAA tournament, it's going to happen. As Coach K noted there, without the NCAA tournament, again, there will be just massive catastrophic damage done to the NCAA financial model. It's the primary fundraiser for the NCAA. A lot of people think it's college football. For athletic departments, that's the primary fundraiser. That's what pays the bills. But for the NCAA, they make $860 million in revenue from the March Madness NCAA tournament. So the tournament, it's going to happen. Will they push it back? Talking about postponing it to April and May? I don't see that happening. If the season starts, let's say worst case scenario, season starts in January, kind of like what the Ivy League's trying to do, and you only play conference games and you have the same protocol, you try to keep things safe, like what the Big Ten's talking about doing in football, then theoretically, you could still have every conference go to the NCAA tournament, and maybe if it's 64 teams, have four hub regional sites, four bubbles, if you will, and knock everything out in a week versus stretching it out over 2 weeks. Maybe you could do that, and then you'll have your final four teams, and you can obviously have a bubble in Indianapolis where it's set to happen in 2021. The NCAA tournament's going to happen. It has to happen. It's a financial decision. It's not a medical decision that's being made. It's not a health decision that's being made. In March, it was a health decision. We didn't know a lot about the virus. Now we know quite a bit months later, and it's about cost risk. And there's a lot bigger cost not doing it versus the risk to the young athletes potentially participating in the tournament for it not to happen in some form. You can tweet us at SportsUpTriad, 336-777-1600 is the phone number if you'd like to chime in that way. Mark Brazel, the tournament director of the Wyndham Championship, will be here in a little over 30 minutes. No fans going to be at the Wyndham in just a few weeks. I'm interested in what effect that has on Sedgefield and the Greensboro tournament, really the Greensboro community. We'll talk to Mark at 5:30. But I want to transition things to college football because today was supposed to be the day we convene in Charlotte for ACC kickoff. Of course, there is no ACC kickoff because of coronavirus. It was at first going to be a virtual event when they decided to veer away from a gathering at the Westin Hotel in Uptown Charlotte. But with the Big Ten's announcement that they were going to go to only conference, only games, the ACC wanted to wait longer before it made a decision like that. So they said they'll announce something by the end of the month. And just to prevent their coaches and John Swafford from being in a tough spot, not being able to answer obvious questions about the season coming up, they canceled the ACC kickoff, which is a shame. I've always enjoyed getting together with the media and chatting with all the coaches, seeing all the teams in the league. It's a very laid-back setting. But I'm sure maybe the most talked about subject at kickoff, if coronavirus didn't exist, was going to be just how good is Mack Brown in North Carolina this year? Just how much ground has been covered by the Tar Heels trying to hawk down Clemson? Clemson's still the best team in the league. Spoiler. Winning the conference 5 years in a row. But I no longer think it's Clemson and everybody else. I think North Carolina has done enough in just a short stretch of time to be seen as the second best team in the conference. And the gap, I don't believe it's as wide as people think. North Carolina, they're going to be a lot better than they were last year. You're bringing back 11, make it 10 of the 11 starters on offense. You're bringing back your best defensive player in Chaz Surratt. You recruited your first five-star player, North Carolina did, in over a dozen years. That's Tony Grimes, the corner. We thought we'd have to wait a year before we saw him on the field, but he's going to be playing for the Tar Heels this season after a reclassification. That's a big deal. North Carolina, undoubtedly, going to be better. Clemson, I also think, undoubtedly, is going to be worse. Now, they're still going to be great. They're still going to be better and more talented than everybody else, but they're not going to be as good as they were last year without T. Higgins and without Justin Ross and without John Simpson on the offensive line and without two more first-round draft picks on defense at A.J. Terrell and Isaiah Simmons. Like, Simmons, he filled so many holes that were left by three D linemen going in the first round in 2018, or make it 2019 draft. Now he's not there. And Tanner Muse, a leader on defense, not there. I don't care how good these recruits coming in are. And I love KJ Henry when he was playing in the triad in North Carolina. But there's going to be drop-off on defense eventually. It happened to Alabama after a few years. It's going to happen to Clemson. They're still going to be the best team. But the Tar Heels, they came a two-point conversion away from beating Clemson a year ago. I don't think it was a fluke. A lot of people do. They use that as a reason why Clemson wasn't the best team in the country going into the college football playoff. I was there. I didn't think it was a fluke. Because coach and quarterback, they are the two greatest equalizers. Aaron Rodgers, he could carry a Green Bay team that I don't think was very talented to the NFC Championship game last year because quarterback plays an equalizer. He could beat Dallas on the road, throwing to nobody a few years ago. Quarterback plays an equalizer. Coaching. Patriots weren't as good as the Rams in that Super Bowl a few years ago. I think there's a few times the Patriots have had talent deficits in games. But coaching matters, and it can equalize. Mac Brown, he's the top five coach of college football. One of the few coaches active to have won a national championship. We're seeing what he can do recruiting. Sam Howell, he's one of the five best quarterbacks in college football. So while I would take Dabo and I would take Trevor over Sam and Mac, I don't think it's a huge gap. All the pressure is on Clemson in a year where everybody's stressed during a pandemic. North Carolina could just go out there and play loosely. And I would not be stunned if they met in Charlotte and North Carolina somehow came up on the winning end. I would not be stunned by that. Let's go to Wayne in Greensboro real quickly. 336-777-1600. Wayne in Greensboro, what do you want in on? College basketball, or do you want in on the North Carolina-Clemson debate?
Well, actually, I called to congratulate you, Josh.
Thank you.
It's coming up on 2 years, I hear, and that's terrific. And this has been a rough time for anybody trying to do what you're doing. And I appreciate the fact that you've remained informative and entertaining, and you resisted the temptation to turn your show into a current events thing. And you know, Fox Sports Radio isn't Fox Sports Corona Update Radio or Fox Sports Re-Elect Trump Radio. I listen to sports shows because I want to be distracted from that stuff and be entertained, and you do it just about every day, so I wanted to thank you for it.
Thank you so much, Wayne, for the phone call, and I have something to say about that as well. Tomorrow is our two-year anniversary on the show, and what Wayne says there means a lot because, Robert, you could tell me, you could tell the listeners, how many days do I come in and we're doing the show and I ask you, am I doing the right thing right now?
Every stinking day.
You know, like, when I listen to sports radio right now, what I listen for as a huge sports fan, I want to hear about football. I want to hear conversation about the NFL and college basketball. And so much of what I'm getting is what Wayne described, where it's all about social issues, which I'm not dismissing or downplaying, but it's just not my area of expertise. I'm great at talking about, you know, the analytics of James Harden and the NBA. I'm not an expert talking about racial inequity, so I don't talk about it really on this show. That's not me ignoring it. It's just not what my advertisers, it's not what my bosses, and I don't really think it's what you guys really want from me. In addition to that, there's the coronavirus piece of this, where obviously coronavirus affects every aspect of our society, and sports is not eliminated from that. But I'm an optimist, and I'm going to talk about these sports as if they're going to happen until I'm told they're not, because I still feel that a big part of sports' role, and in turn sports radio's role, is trying to salvage the morale of the nation, where we look forward to these games. We look forward to the draft. We look forward to having some sense of normalcy. And if we could play some role in doing that, and I've heard that feedback a number of times from people, hey, it just feels normal to hear you guys yucking it up and talking about sports. Gosh, that's your influence on me. I don't think I ever said yuck it up before until I met you. That's intentional. So that meant a lot. That's a really neat thing to hear.
Let's go, baby.
What, kind of like this?
Let's go!
Back to The Drive with Josh Graham on Sports Hub Triad.
Darren Vaught from USA Baseball isn't picking up his phone, Robert. Is that what you're telling me?
That's what I'm saying.
Darren Vaught. I thought we were friends. He comes on here every single week, usually delivers. There's baseball. I see exhibition games going on right now, and the season's getting set to start tomorrow. How bad would it be? We're looking forward to baseball so much, and the opener between the Nationals and the Yankees rains out. That would be the absolute worst thing, as Dr. Anthony Fauci gets set to throw out the first pitch. We're now being joined by Darren Vaught, who wasn't picking up his phone a minute ago, but apparently is now. I mean, what do you got to say for yourself? You deserve that. All right. That's blaring with Darren. Now let's get set to do some comparing with Darren. But before we do so, what is the explanation out there for why Charlotte can't host the Toronto Blue Jays this year? I see the stuff with the lights, but now that the Pittsburgh Pirates said we'll pass, it looks like it's either Florida, the spring training home. They already turned down Buffalo because of the air quote lights, and Charlotte was batted around a little bit, but again, they fall into that same AAA category. What's going on here?
Yeah, they do. I don't think North Carolina's COVID-19 numbers helps the case of the Charlotte Knights and when it comes to hosting. And the only difference, like you're going to bring up the spring training complex in Florida, the only difference, or the AAA complex in Florida, the only difference is the ease of use, because it's within the Blue Jays system, the one down in Florida, as opposed to Charlotte. It's such a long way for Toronto to take team and staff, and it seems bizarre to me that they would think Florida a better option than Charlotte, but who knows? We'll see. You know, Buffalo was in the cards before the lights, and then who knows?
All right. It's time to do some comparing with Darren. If you don't know what this segment's about, Robert has come up with things for Darren and I to compare. Where do you want to start, Robert?
I think I'll start with Darren. How's it going, Darren?
I'm great, man. How are you? Sorry I didn't pick up.
Oh, you're good. No big deal. Only two calls. Sometimes I call people like six times and no pickup. So I'm not mad at you. You came in and we got to hit you with the blaring.
Wait, you call people six times straight?
Oh, I do not care about blowing somebody up. If you are scheduled to be on this program...
That's not ideal.
Yeah, you
probably
can.
Shouldn't do that.
They can be mad at me about calling them too many times. But anyway,
taking the bullets for Josh.
Mookie Betts signed a huge deal today. I'm sure you are no stranger to who Mookie Betts is. I was earlier until Josh explained to me who he was. But I would like you to compare Mookie Betts to Lando Calrissian from Star Wars.
Both, the coolest characters of their respective shows.
Billy Dee Williams, right? Knocks it out of the park.
Not to be confused with Lionel Richie.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with Lionel Richie. And Donald Glover in the newer Solo, I thought did a really good job as Lando. And I don't even go specifically to watch Star Wars films, but I went to see that one and I enjoyed it. It was good. I would say Mookie is less conniving, like less of an underhanded character. He's going to be more honest, more genuine with you. But I see a lot of similarities, right? Both extremely charming. Both
devilishly handsome. Yeah.
Both handsome. Yeah.
Who would play a young Mookie if Childish Gambino is playing young Lando? Who is playing young Mookie?
Well, I mean, does it matter if we find someone better than Michael B. Jordan?
No. No.
They're going to cast him.
You're right. You're right. Josh, you were upset about the Charlotte's soccer team. Darren, you knew this was the terrible name the whole time?
I mean, I knew what it was. I knew what the crest looked like, yeah.
God, you could have let us in on it, dude. Anyway,
yeah,
Josh,
we were really mad.
Did you see their list? No matter what, it was going to be FC, and that's Josh's hang-up.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. I'm just saying that if you're going to do the full 8-team layout and tell people, hey, here are a lot of creative names we're looking at, don't choose the most unimaginative one of them all. Charlotte FC, like Robert gave the example earlier, and it's a good one. It's like saying to like kids, hey, do you want a PS5? Do you want to have the newest Xbox? Look at these toys. Here's a train set. That's what this was, essentially.
Anyway,
No. They're not necessarily better. They're just different. I'm with you. Maybe don't roll it out the way that they did, but I think they chose the correct name.
Either way, Josh, I would like you to compare Charlotte's brand new soccer team to Drake misusing Arabic in his new single, Pop Star.
Well, I have issue.
I thought you were about to speak Arabic there.
I have issue with some of the misuses of words in both instances. The fact that Charlotte FC is using the same colors as the Panthers and they're playing in a football stadium, it's kind of funny that you're going to call yourself Charlotte Football Club when we have a sport called football and they have the same colors that your team has and they're playing in the same place. That's almost as funny, that idea, as Drake deciding to go the Arabic route and then messing it up.
Is there a single culture that he has not appropriated into his rap? I mean, the dude is a chameleon. Literally.
Yeah, no chance.
Well, not literally.
I think he might be a lizard, Josh. Anyway, you guys are both
just
very...
like championship teams. He's just somehow crept into the fan bases of all religions and ethnicities.
You guys are on fire today. So, Darren, I'm going to throw you a little curveball here. While everyone else is binging Unsolved Mysteries, I have been binging Supermarket Sweep. I used to watch it on my hands and knees in my grandma's living room. I would like you to compare that fantastic television show to Booker T and Stone Cold having a brawl in a grocery store that one time, and it was great.
Yeah, okay, let me tell you, sometimes Supermarket Sweep gets that heated. It does.
I'm serious.
In households, let me tell you about the mid-90s. In households, I was but a young guy watching my father, who I've been convinced for 30 years could have run the table on that show. He could have.
He knew all the prices?
he knew them like the back of his hand. And better yet, unlike Unsolved Mysteries, the evidence changes over time, right? Old Gary Vaught, man, today he knows the prices to those items. If it was still a current show, he would fight people, he would win, he would be ruthless, and he would dominate.
Those planners cost $238 and not a cent more! Josh, I would like you to compare the NBA bubble to the Truman Show.
Oh, wow. There's the obvious where you have a bubble, but the differences are the players can leave the bubble in the NBA, but there will be punishment as a result. You will be quarantined, kind of like that guy on the Kings was. By the way, did you see what he ended up getting as takeout?
No, what was it?
Oh, it was like lemon pepper wings. He was getting takeout. We learned that today from Rashawn Holmes.
That's the problem, because Truman in that movie had no idea that there was an outside world outside of the bubble. These guys already know too much. There's no keeping them inside of it.
That's right. So that is an issue. But a similarity, Jim Carrey would have no issue going to a pool party by himself at 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, the same way Dwight Howard did. And apparently the best part of the story that Malika Andrews did, the best part was apparently the DJ on the microphone said, "I want to thank Dwight Howard for coming out. You're a real one." The only one that showed up to this pool party.
All right, I got one more for each of you.
In the Truman Show bubble, there would have been like planted people to be at that party.
That's right.
Oh, for sure.
At that point that Dwight starts to get suspicious that his life is a made-for-TV movie.
All right, Darren, who's next? I got one for both of you left.
All right, let's do rapid fire. We're running out of time.
All right, Giants hiring their first women on-field coach to...
Woman.
The woman... What? I don't even know what I said. Who cares? You know what I meant. I want you to compare that to The Bride and Kill Bill killing unlimited henchmen.
All right, well, they both happened long ago because technically they hired Alyssa a long time ago.
It's been
like close to a year. So we're finally seeing it. We'll call that the pre-production.
Gotcha.
That up until yesterday when she was coaching at first base, or maybe it was the day before, whenever it happened. I know, obviously, that's what's the topical reason that we're talking about her. We'll call it pre-production. And you know what? Similarly to Uma Thurman, she slayed.
Yep. That's what I was going for. They both had a lot of obstacles in their way, but they cut them in half. And finally, this is my last one.
This has to be the last one.
I would like you to compare Kevin Garnett putting in a bid for the Timberwolves to the Loch Ness Monster from South Park.
I mean, there's an obvious thing that puts these two together. I don't know if saying this is offensive, but it's going to cost Kevin Garnett about Tree Fitty.
That's all I cared about. That's all I cared about. You win. That's correct.
That's the only thing.
Oh, dang it. Kevin Garnett's back. He's like, man, I need about $350 million to buy.
Need about $350. Darren, thanks for being here, man. That was a good comparing sesh.
I agree. I'll talk to you guys later.
There you go. From the USA Baseball Podcast, covering the bases, and High Point play-by-play man, Darren Vaught, on Twitter, at Darren Vaught. Coming up, why I'm more concerned about college basketball without a vaccine than college football. Keep it here on The Drive. As the producer of this show, Robert loves messy talk. Like, Robert likes it when he hears coaches talking smack anonymously. And really, he's just all about that hot goss.
You hit it right on the head with messy. I love all the mess.
We'll get to Mark Brazel, tournament director of the Wyndham, in about 15 minutes. Also, The Athletic put out a survey among Duke fans asking them who the most valuable player for next year's team is going to be. I have some issue with who they chose. We'll get to that in 5 minutes. But Sam Facenti, who does a really good job for The Athletic talking about the draft, he polled a number of coaches asking about Cole Anthony at North Carolina. And it's become clear that Cole is the most polarizing player in this draft, and that's saying something because there's a Ball brother set to go in the lottery. Just reading some of these reviews, and he is getting crushed. I'll just go over some Cliff's notes. Coach one, I think he's always going to be an inconsistent three-point shooter. I think he's going to spend a lot of time on it, but he has this whole weird side body mechanics, the cuffed wrist, forearm follow through, the whole thing structurally, it's not where you want it to be. I don't think he's a very good defensive player. His live dribble passing isn't very good. To me, I think his career plays out where he plays on a lot of bad teams and scores more points than people expect.
And honestly, don't tell anybody this. This didn't come from me. I think I saw him at Chick-fil-A with a girl that was not his girlfriend.
What is that supposed to mean?
I thought we were doing messy talk. I thought we were talking messy.
Oh. Sawyer actually did do something like that. Like Sawyer said, he has friends who are in Chapel Hill. Like when he got injured and there was question whether or not he was going to come back, he comes in one day really bummed out saying, oh man, I don't think Cole's coming back. I'm like, really? Why? He's like, I know this girl who slept with Cole who said he was going to be out of here in a little bit.
No, I think he meant you're going to be out of here in a little bit. Get out of my room. That's what he meant.
So Sawyer really liked the messy talk too. I don't really value it that much. Pretty sure this coach that described him is Jim Christian. I think this coach is Boston College coach Jim Christian. I really do. Just based on the things I know about Cole's season. Remember, he got hurt. How many teams really saw him blow a game potentially? How many teams actually saw that with North Carolina being as bad as they were where they can say this? I like him. What he does on the court, it's dynamic as there is. But when we played them, you could make a case he lost a game for them. He said he was going to be the man, but he didn't recognize coverage and was selfish. He should have passed it around, but bleep, straight line or in transition, you know how good he is. He's ridiculous. I think being an NBA player some will help him at the next level. I think they'll embrace him and help him a little bit more. Whereas if you were Joe Blow, really good player, and you had the same kind of lack of decision making, I think people would be like, bleep this dude. I don't want to play with him. But because he's Greg Anthony's son, I think they'll want to help Cole. That's just my personal opinion. Being in the NBA with elite guys will help him. He's got an ego, as he should be. He's a really good player, but because of his dad and the way he goes about his business, he'll listen to those guys maybe more than he'll listen to Roy Williams.
He could not stop.
It's messy.
He was like, oh, here's a compliment, and here's the back of my hand. There's a compliment, and back of my hand again real quick.
This is the worst one of them all, though.
No, there's worse than that.
Well, the reason I think it's Jim Christian, let me explain that. He had a ton of shots against Boston College. They should have won that game. They lost it. And I don't see Danny Manning nor Jim Boeheim dropping a ton of F-bombs to a reporter from The Athletic. Jim Christian knows he should have been fired. He's just sitting there thinking, man, I'll talk to every reporter anonymously and say curse words.
Okay, so get to the rest of the tea.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
Here's Coach 5. Wasn't a fan. I'll be honest with you. I don't think he's that good. He makes bad decisions. Not a great shooter. He could shoot it from deep because Roy Williams let him do anything he wanted, but I wasn't impressed. He didn't have a burst like I thought. If you gave him a two or three step approach, I'm not sure if I could say this sentence.
Oh, you have to now.
If you gave him a two or three step approach, he can put his on the rim. But other than that, I just don't think he's a good point guard. I don't.
God, I think that's a pretty necessary skill to be able to put your blank on the rim as a point guard.
Yeah.
Jumping out the gym. Isn't that what they say? Kind of slouch it. Like, did this dude see the guy in the locker room?
Here's what's frustrating.
And he was like upset about it?
Here's what's frustrating. It almost seems like Cole is being punished for playing for a bad team, deciding to return to a team that he knew, had to have known, wasn't that great. He could have gotten off the ship, the sinking Titanic, if he wanted to, the way James Wiseman bailed. But I like the fact he wanted to compete and get back in there. There weren't a lot of playmakers around him. This wasn't a team ready to play. Oh, Roy Williams would let him do anything he wanted. Yeah, because he didn't have other guys to give the ball to. He didn't have other guys who could make plays. Because everybody else was hurt. Anthony Harris, Brandon Robinson getting into a car accident. Armando Bacot. Armando. Garrison Brooks' eye. I mean, you name it. That's what was happening here. I'm scared to continue reading.
No, please, Josh. Come on.
No, that's the degree of it. Those are the best examples I can give. Shifting things to Duke basketball, though. Brendan Marks, he did a fan survey for Tar Heel fans, and we covered that. But he also did one for the Blue Devils, too. And the question was, who's going to be Duke's MVP for 2020-2021? And 45% of the fans that responded, and you're talking about hundreds of fans here, most of them said Wendell Moore Jr., who last year, we didn't really get to see the full complement of what he could do because he was injured. He had the game-winning shot at the buzzer against North Carolina in Chapel Hill. That's what he's going to be remembered for regardless of what he does next season or if he plays longer than that. But Wendell Moore's not the most valuable player on Duke because there's still question. He might be the starter for Duke this year. Now, if I had to guess, I'd say he is going to start. But they still have to figure out, and it's a good problem to have, point guard, shooting guard, who starts between Jeremy Roach, top 25 point guard, five-star player, Jordan Goldwire, and Wendell Moore. Goldwire, he's a better defensive player than Wendell is. They have to replace Trey Jones, who was a defensive player of the year. Goldwire, he was my favorite player on that team last year. Most improved. I think he's going to take another step, too. If he gets a jumper, he's going to be a really good player. Older than Wendell Moore. So, for one, I think that makes you probably not the most valuable player. Also, he isn't the primary ball handler. That would be Roach at point guard. He isn't going to be the go-to scorer. That's soon-to-be one-and-done freshman Jalen Johnson. And he isn't a strong post presence type, that's going to be Matthew Hurt, who I think is being undervalued by many. He very well could be the most important player, but my answer to this question would be Jalen Johnson. Like, when's the last time Duke, their go-to option, their most important player, wasn't a one-and-done freshman? You can easily say Trey Jones was that guy a year ago because he won the most outstanding player in the ACC. He was the player of the year in the ACC. But I think Vernon Carey was more important to Duke's success than Trey was. There's a difference between being the most talented player and being the most valuable. We've learned this all throughout sports. I don't think there's any way Wendell Moore could be the most valuable player, but Jalen Johnson, he can be. I think he has an incredible scoring ability. And the last time Duke had an MVP who wasn't a freshman, in my mind, you probably have to go back to Seth Curry or Mason Plumlee. Because I thought Carey was more valuable than Trey Jones was a year ago. See how Robert immediately checks out when I start talking hoops versus the Messi talk?
No, they can't see that. They couldn't see that at all.
Yeah, are you watching more exhibition hoops over there?
I'm on the Nugs and Wizard game now.
What's the score?
It's in commercial. I don't have it in front of me, but I'll get it for you.
I'm seeing on my Twitter feed, it's great that the NBA is back on our screen. I'm seeing that Bol Bol had a big block.
Dude, the three. He not three blocks, but he blocked a three. It's he's gonna be fun to watch.
Bol Bol. How much damage does a fanless PGA Tour event at Sedgefield do to the Wyndham Championship? We'll discuss with the tournament director of the Wyndham, Mark Brazel, when he joins us next.
What the hell is this?
The Drive.
This is kind of a great thing, and I'll tell you what.
Get caught up with all things sports.
That's awesome!
Well, that's not totally true. He talks about The Bachelorette, too.
Yes!
The Drive with Josh Graham on Sports Hub Triad.
I'm not going to lie to you. I was a little bummed out earlier today, this morning, when my calendar reminded me that ACC kickoff was supposed to be today and tomorrow in Charlotte. That's always what turns our sights to college football season and makes it feel like it's near. At first, they changed it to virtual, and then they just outright canceled it after the Big Ten's announcement that they were going to play only conference games. The ACC buying itself some time before they make a decision like that. They said they're going to announce something by the end of July, so sometime next week we expect something from John Swofford. But, you know, it was always an event we looked forward to, and I even see this week media day for the Wyndham Championship, usually something we look forward to as well. That's a get-together at Sedgefield. It's now something that's done mostly virtual, and somebody actually hit me on Twitter today saying, they were bummed out because this is the week that the Open Championship was supposed to happen, and it got canceled. The Wyndham is still on, and it's set for August 13th, a few weeks away, but it will be no fans in attendance, so you're going to have to watch on Golf Channel or CBS. Now being joined by the tournament director of the Wyndham, our good friend Mark Brazel on Sports Hub Triad. I want to, just speaking from sheer effect to the tournament and to Greensboro, how damaging of a blow is it to not have fans at the event?
Well, first off, I'd say hello, Josh, and tell you thanks for having me. You know, it's definitely a blow. I mean, anytime you take a big event away from Greensboro and the Triad, it certainly hurts hotels and restaurants and rental cars and, you know, the airport a little bit, and just all the different ways that we create kind of economic impact. It certainly hurts, but the biggest part of economic impact that we produce with our golf tournament is really through the PGA Tour and through the Golf Channel and CBS, not only in the United States or North America, but also all around the world. With about, you know, we reach about 1.4 billion households around the world, and that's the biggest impact we have. So that we're still on TV is still a big deal, but it is a little bit heartbreaking not to be able to have fans out of the tournament and sponsors.
About a month ago, me and Robert, we were in the studio when we learned that Brooks Koepka and Webb Simpson, they were pulling out of the Travelers in Connecticut. And there was a press conference set to happen, I think, at 2 o'clock that day. And we were fearing the worst, saying, oh, no, this reminds us of where we were in March when they suspended play for essentially all of sports. But then the commissioner speaks and says, rather than suspending play, we're just going to make sure our protocols are better than they were at that time, as caddies were testing positive. You had a few players testing positive too. And it seems it's produced results. You had Tiger last week on the PGA Tour, and that drew some ratings. And they seem to have gotten better as they've gone on. Do you have any clue, Mark, what kinds of adjustments were made? What types of areas were sharpened?
You know, I think they just created a tighter bubble. And what I mean by bubble is there's four to 500 people each week that get tested. The nasal swab test, that basically they get a result in about an hour and a half. And then once they are clear or they have a negative result, then they're basically allowed to go out to the golf course or to their hotel. And those are the two places they can go to, basically. And they need to figure out their meals. They can eat in, or they can actually go out and grab some food and then bring it back to the hotel. But they just got tighter with that bubble. I think they kind of doubled down a little bit, and they had a come to Jesus meeting with the players and just said, look, guys, we got to take this way more seriously than you're taking it now. And I think the players stepped up and listened to them.
Follow Mark on Twitter at WyndhamTD. It's Mark Brazel, the tournament director of the Wyndham Championship. With your tournament being the week after the PGA Championship and with everything swirling, How do you feel about player turnout, or have you even gotten that far?
Yeah, you know, we're starting to think about that on a daily basis now. I check our field every day, and I'll be honest with you, Josh, it's getting good. I like, and I say that, you know, kind of apprehensively because I'm usually talking about this so that the fans would get excited, and now it's just have to be that you can watch them on TV at Sedge, you know, and watch them play Sedgefield. But anyway, the field's going to be strong. I think the Wyndham Rewards top 10 is going to make a major impact this year, even more than last year. I was just looking at like the top 30 players, and I would not be surprised if we didn't have 15 to 17 of those top 30 players at our tournament.
Wow. That would be something. Are you holding your breath?
That would be like best ever. I mean, I'd say 15 to 17 of the top 30 on the, what they call the FedEx Cup or the Wyndham Rewards top 10 rankings. I think that's a gettable number.
You still holding your breath for Tiger?
Always. I think Tiger's got a decision to make about playing next week or not. He'll let people know that on Friday. Obviously, I think our chances might improve a little bit if he doesn't go play Memphis. But, you know, we'll just have to see what happens with his schedule.
What has interested you most watching tournaments week to week? I know you got the shout out from Webb Simpson when he wins in South Carolina, and you got a chance to see how things looked driving to that tournament. What interested you most seeing what the fields or what the tournaments looked like versus what we've all watched on television?
Well, you know, when you go to a PGA Tour event, especially like a RBC down at Hilton Head, the Heritage, on a Wednesday. That's when I showed up on Wednesday. Normally you have a bunch of people out there watching the Pro-Am just kind of having a party. And it was just like, it looked like a ghost town. It was just the players and the caddies, and that was about it, you know, and some guys and some in the tartan jackets that I knew, and they're the guys that run the tournament along with the Steve Wilmot and his staff. And so that was just it, you know. It's kind of like, ouch, you know. And I've never seen that at a PGA Tour event on Wednesday or Thursday or Friday. So I saw those 3 days, and, you know, tough deal. But, you know, again, I'm just you got to look at this, you know, the glass half full. We're able to play. PGA Tour pros are playing. It's on TV. Those are all very positive things during a pandemic.
Are you more stressed or less stressed for the start of this Wyndham Championship, knowing that it's a different type of undertaking with no fans being in attendance?
It's a different type of stress, I'll be honest with you. You know, normally we've got so many things moving and working with trying to sell tickets and selling last minute sponsorships and doing things for Wyndham and making sure Truist is happy and they're such a great partner, they and Wyndham, that, you know, you never stop, you know. And our interns are working hard, the staff's working hard, our committee's working hard. This one is a little different in that, since we've never done it, I've got the best operations director in the world in Bobby Powell, and you basically say, here you go, Bobby, here's the playbook, you know, you tell us what the playbook is, and he's done a heck of a job for us. But it's just a different type of stress. I mean, I'm a little nervous. I'll be very honest with you. I'm nervous. I'm nervous about, you know, one of us testing positive or the players testing positive. You don't want that at your own tournament. You know, chances are that somebody's going to test positive, and we try to make good decisions these next 3-4 weeks, and we just, you know, hope and pray that we have a really uneventful but successful tournament.
Out of reflex, have you told anybody over the last week and a half, just in passing, we hope to see you at the Wyndham Championship, even though there's no fans allowed?
You mean, did I mistakenly say that?
Yeah.
Somebody? Yes, I've done that. but I've also sent a lot of text out to agents and players in that regard. But I have, yeah, I've definitely talked about, you know, I've kind of slipped on, oh, I can't wait till, and then I have to stop and go, oh, never mind. You know,
well,
it's just 19 years of it.
Well, you and I, we've talked about this the last few years. I think with the ACC tournament not coming to Greensboro so often anymore, the Wyndham, especially with the Wyndham Rewards Top 10 recently, has now, it's become the crown jewel of our sports market in the Triad. So if there's ever anything you need from us and ways to pass along information, feel free to use our platform in doing so. And we look forward to chatting with you the week of the tournament, Mark. Good luck in the preparation of it. Again, the Wyndham Championship, still a few weeks away from the tournament starting. It's on. You're going to have to watch on CBS and on Golf Channel because you can't attend in person, but play is going to begin on August 13th. Thanks so much, Mark.
Appreciate it, buddy.
There he goes. That's Mark Brazel, Tournament Director of the Wyndham. Follow him on Twitter at WyndhamTD. You know, I've noticed this. There are times I take forever to say bye, when in reality, I have relationships with these people. I don't need to do the long goodbye. Like, they're probably just trying to get off the phone, and I'm doing the long buildup. That's probably an example of where just saying thanks will work.
Sometimes you do two things that irk me, and I don't really want to get into them today.
Please let me know what they are so I know.
So you can continue to do them?
No. Tell me what irks you, because this is how we grow. Like, Tony Kornheiser is the best, because if you ever watch PTI, he ends an interview by saying the person's name, Rory McIlroy, thanks. That's it. That's the degree of it. There's no nothing. It's Rory McIlroy, thank you.
I was saving this for the two-year anniversary tomorrow, but I guess I can get into it now. There are two things you do at the end of interviews that irk me. I don't know why. One is when you say, you are the absolute best. But you have said that to multiple people.
Oh, no.
How many absolute bests can there be?
I actually do that to a lot of people I talk to in public, too. I mean, it's not just interviews. It's who I am. Like, it makes people feel good.
Yeah.
I appreciate them coming on.
Okay. I mean, I can see that. I'm not going to dog you so much about that.
Okay.
Any out-of-state guest, Josh will always say, I'll save you a plate of barbecue.
When's the last time I did that?
I don't know. When's the last out-of-state guest we have?
I mean, we had an out-of-state guest. I mean, we have out-of-state guests all the time. I don't say, I'll save you a plate. I used to do that. I stopped with, I'll save you a plate of barbecue.
I'm glad you did that, because it's not like people in Nashville are like, next time you get here, we're getting some Nashville hot chicken. Come to Maryland, we're going to get you a crab cake.
They might, actually.
I don't think they do that. But if you stop doing it, maybe that's why I haven't noticed it in a while.
You know what? Now you're kind of ruining. I was in a good mood, and now you're kind of ruining it a bit. You know what I need? I need some positivity. Let's do our weekly positivity. Yeah. If you want to call in and tell us what's good, a couple of good things happening to you in your life, whatever it is, sports, business, you just got that big promotion, 336-777-1600 is the phone number. Hey, Robert.
Yeah, hey. Yeah, what's up?
Hey.
Hey, how's it going?
You want to know what's good?
Sure.
White Zombie Beer.
Is it an IPA, or... Where'd you try that at?
It's Catawba Brewing. It's probably my favorite go-to beer. It was so good that for the first time in a very long time, I just had a few by myself. And I was watching 30 for 30 documentaries.
And you're cool with that?
I was cool with it.
Okay, that's all that matters.
What's something good happening to you?
I think I have a girlfriend now.
Wow. Robert's got a girlfriend.
Oh, yeah, great. Somebody cares about me. I don't know, man, because, like, at first she was just kind of this girl I hung out with and would invite her over late at night, but... It just slowly grew on me that she...
During a pandemic, that doesn't seem safe.
I mean, we were doing it before the pandemic, too. Inviting her over, that is. And I don't know. She got a job down in Tampa, and then I kind of missed her. And so now I've got a girlfriend. I think she's going to move in with me.
How does she do that if she lives in Tampa?
She's getting a job in Winston now.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, pretty cool.
So you just started dating, and she's moving in.
Yeah, I know. We're skipping a couple steps there. We've been... seeing each other for about 2 years. She went to my high school. I'm just kind of concerned about meeting her dad. He's like this big biker guy. I fully expect him to crush my skull the first time I meet him. Hey, you've been seeing my daughter and never met me. Thanks a lot for that. So yeah, I mean, I guess that's good. Not good? I don't know.
That is pretty good. I'm happy for you, buddy.
Appreciate it.
Hey, Robert.
What's that? I'm right here.
Baseball starts tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
Dr. Anthony Fauci's throwing out the first pitch. And I'll tell you something that isn't good.
Do we need to stop the music?
Actually, you know what? Let's not get negative. Let's stay with the positive.
Okay, cool.
There seem to be concerns that there might be a rainout tomorrow.
No.
But the weather reports are now starting to look good.
Well, that's great.
Let me check that real quick. Washington, D.C. Weather. Good.
Who are the Nats playing?
They're playing the New York Yankees.
Oh, fun. I might check that out.
Yeah. There's still a chance for thunderstorms and rain.
You know what?
That's not good.
We're going to will it into existence. It is going to be a beautiful day tomorrow, and we are going to have a great stretch of baseball games.
Yeah.
And nothing's going to go wrong. We got Dr. Fauci there, dude. He'll kick Corona's ass if they show its face.
60% chance of rain tomorrow night.
It's okay. It's good.
Scattered thunderstorms and gusty winds. That's not good, but baseball back is good.
Yeah, and we got basketball back. Hockey's coming back next week, right?
Next Saturday.
Next Saturday!
Hockey, basketball, baseball. Oh, it's so good.
Before you know it, we'll be having monster truck rallies and demolition derbies again.
We don't have those already.
Are they? I guess they're not doing them.
Monster trucks?
Who would they be crushing? Who would Gravedigger be out here digging on if there are no fans? You think Gravedigger just drives that truck around every day?
Probably not.
Have you ever been to a demolition derby before? They're very redneck. I would assume that that's out of your wheelhouse.
Why would you assume that?
I just don't think that you would enjoy watching people drive little jalopies around and crush each other and potentially hurt people. That didn't seem like your bag. You seemed like a drink white zombie beer and watch 30 for 30s by yourself kind of guy.
That's right. And I've never been to a demolition derby.
You gotta go, man. They're a lot of fun. I like to people watch there because some people will walk out of their houses wearing the free t-shirts that they've gathered across their whole life and not care who sees them in those free t-shirts.
Do you have anything else good to add?
No. My life's pretty bleak besides getting a girlfriend, and I'm not even sold on that yet. So, yeah!
And that's been Weekly Positivity. Robert, what do you got in Ticket to the House today?
Finally, a lemonade stand that I would actually get a cup from.
I got a feeling this is going to lead to an argument. You know that feeling, Robert, you're going to feel this being in a relationship. You just know that there's an argument coming.
Just try not to breathe.
I got a feeling. Wait, what was that?
You just try not to breathe too hard, try not to tick them off.
That's right. I got a feeling an argument's about to happen between me and Robert with this subject. When we take it to the house. Next.